Welcome to Intuitive Eating for Christian Women. I'm your co-host, Erin Todd. I'm a writer and an intuitive eater.
And I'm your co-host, Charlie Castle, registered dietitian and exercise physiologist. We're here to help you discover whole health for your mind, body, and soul.
That's right. Our goal is to embody scripture, ditch dieting, and live on purpose.
Woo! Woo! Yes, girl.
Welcome back, friends. You are joining us in the heart of season two of the podcast, where our guests are sharing their God story, their food story, and the lessons they've learned along the way. These conversations are meant to be encouraging as you walk the intuitive eating path with Jesus. If you are looking to learn about intuitive eating, you need to head back to season one of the podcast. That is our teaching season where we lay the foundation and then unpack each of the principles of intuitive eating, specifically from a biblical perspective, one at a time. Season one was meant to be treated like an online course, so you got to listen from the beginning and in order and just take your time. These season two stories of encouragement will be waiting for you, and you can come back to them at any time. I know you're going to get so much more out of the season two conversations if you just take the time to learn the basics back in season one first. So in today's episode, Char is talking with our very first male guest, Sean Coons, and he's going to be enlightening us with his God story, his food story, and what the Lord has taught him along the way. Sean Coons is the author of Body, or How Hope Confronts Her Shadow and Calls the Flutter Girl to Flight, an inspirational fiction comedy exploring body image and intuitive eating. Sean has written for The Atlantic, The Christian Post, and Compared to Who. I do want to give a quick content warning that there are several references to weight and specific weight amounts in the early parts of Sean's story, so if you think that might be triggering to you, then please take care of yourself. Before we jump into our conversation with Sean, as a reminder for all of our podcast episodes, this program is for informational and educational purposes only, and it is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. Our aim is to introduce you to the principles of intuitive eating and help you see how those principles align with scripture so you can improve your relationship with food, your body, and God, and cast out dieting for good.
All right. Welcome to Intuitive Eating for Christian Women. Sean, we are so excited to have you here today.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. I'm really, really excited to talk to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Absolutely. So we love to just jump right into it and get to know you a little bit with your God story and your food story, your body image story. Or so if you'll take us back to whichever starts first and kind of tell us about your journey.
All right. I'd be glad to. I'll start with the food journey, actually. And they do, the two stories do weave together in a very interesting way, I think. And so I always, there's the live to eat and the eat to live people. Right. And I was always have been the live to eat type of a person. And so I love food, and growing up, I loved food, and I tended to overeat. And I would even say, thinking back, I would even take pride in my ability to put down food, you know, as a kid, as sure. You know, you kind of get that encouragement sometimes, like, whoa, he really can eat a lot. So it just, it was a joyful part of my life, but it was also, as I kind of realized later, creating problems for me. So I became a Christian when I was about 12 years old, and became very passionate about my faith. And that was very important to me growing up through adolescence. And during that period of time, that next, let's say, 8 or 9 years of adolescence, I had been a little bit overweight when I was younger, not to the point where maybe a doctor would tell me to lose weight, but a little, carrying more weight than I think my body was probably meant to, because I tended to overeat. Right. Mm-hmm. And so adolescence hits, and through high school, I went through the growth spurt like we all do. And it just wasn't an issue. I could eat anything I wanted to. And I was pretty lean, and because of that growth spurt. And then I stopped growing. right? And so, like many of us have these different stages, depending on where you all are listening in your life, there's these moments where your metabolism changes, right? And that habit I'd built up in my youth of just every meal going for it, eating beyond, way beyond what I should have been eating at the time based on how I felt, I started gaining weight. And that also coincided with moving out and being on my own for the first time. So I went from having a pretty balanced approach to food, you know, fast food once or twice a month growing up, you know, not, but otherwise healthy meals to, hey, I'm in my early 20s, just me and my friends. And worst case scenario, I could have told you every fast food restaurant, who had the dollar deals, who had the supersize, you know, I had that down. So I was into that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so, at the same time, sadly, I became the prodigal son. That's part of my story.
Okay.
And yeah. And that, not a proud thing, of course, but I think the combination of these two things led me to understand some things the hard way, learning the hard way, and gain some wisdom about my body, my faith, and how those interacted. And so in my early 20s, I found myself with this very realistic goal of becoming a rock star, right? Odds were in my favor. You just go out there, you're going to make it happen. I love music, and I really had, I think, a good motivation. I really did love music and writing music and playing the guitar. And I had a band of friends I played with. We lived in a little suburb outside of LA. So we would go up to play music in Los Angeles and Hollywood, and had all these dreams, and things were going well, and we were having fun. And I had this moment one night. I was in a nightclub. We were going to play that evening. And a kind of a colleague of ours in another band, he's a very straightforward guy.
Mm-hmm.
No ill intent whatsoever. He wants to be helpful, but blunt, in your face. And he goes, my last name's Coons. He says, Coons, you're looking fat. And you're trying to make it here in Hollywood? I don't know, dude. You better get it together, because this isn't the kind of town that's too forgiving about things like that. And so when I've told this story, I've had very interesting interactions. And I specifically wanted to bring it up that not to generalize or stereotype, but I've talked to women, and I told that story, and they're like, oh, like that would really hurt my feelings. And I don't know, thinking back, I don't feel like it did. I think this might be a very much a generalization, but I took it as I have these professional goals, and this, my approach to food and lack of exercise is disrupting my ability to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that really impacted me in that moment. And I kind of thought, oh, wow. I had kind of been wearing the big clothes and trying to sort of hide that I had gained weight in my early 20s. I was definitely, I think it's a relative thing, each of us, what our weight should be, but I could tell my body had more weight on it than it should. Right. Mm-hmm. And, so anyways, it was sort of an eye-opening experience. Said, okay, what am I going to do with this information? And I went to another friend of mine in the same group of music that I played with, and asked him if he'd help me, because he knew how to work out, lift weights and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And my thinking was, I am into this fast food lifestyle, and I am not into exercise at all. I don't think I can do this, but maybe I'll give it a try and see if he can help me. And it turned out, I really discovered that I'm a very habitual person. Mm-hmm. And I went from this lifestyle that I've already described to, within a few weeks, shifting into highly disciplined, looking back, overly disciplined approach to eating and exercise.
Yeah.
I started with, well, I'll knock soda out. Mm-hmm. I didn't have soda for the next few years, right?
Yeah.
Not a big loss. I mean, you know, to this day, I don't really enjoy soda that much, but I thought at the time, I can't give up soda. How mm-hmm. do I eat a burger and fries with no soda?
Mm-hmm.
And then next to go was fast food, right? It went from, well, I'll have it on weekends, to I didn't walk into a fast food restaurant for several years after this, right? So you're getting the idea. Kind of tend toward these extremes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No exercise. We're in the gym 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, at the time, it really charged me up. I really was into it. I was really excited about it. I was very well aware that I was using my mind to discipline my body. looking back, I took that all too far. It didn't go to the point, I don't believe, of like an eating disorder, for example, or I didn't damage my body or take anything that would be unhealthy. But I just was, my priorities shifted so much to what do I look like and how much muscle do I have, mm-hmm. and how strong am I, and things that in balance can maybe be okay, but again, took it too far off the deep end. And so, and this was also a time again where prodigal son, you're doing what you want, right? I was not looking at how does God want me to live, not at all at this time. And in a very interesting twist, well, real quick, I did lose a lot of weight. I lost about 65 pounds. I went from kind of wearing the clothes to hide my body to, if you ran into me, you were going to see my arms, and you know, I'm performing. I'm now the tank top and all that, kind of trying to show off a little bit jumping into the vanity aspect of all of it and enjoying that. And it did, you know, just being honest, it did probably help my musical path. Mm-hmm. I started joining more bands, and I ended up going on tour across the United States, and I got to tour in Norway and all this stuff that, had I not gotten in better shape, I don't think that would have been an opportunity.
Yeah.
But for better or worse, right? Yeah. It's kind of what that world, there's the stage image is part of it. And okay. So I kind of became that image in a way, along with some of the shallowness, like I mentioned, and the vanity of it all too. Mm-hmm. So in what, for me as a person of faith, looking back now, seeing God just working behind the scenes, the same person who told me in that club, hey, you're looking fat, he and I started hanging out. I sought out his mentorship as a musician. He's about 15 years older than me. He had had a lot of success in the musical world, virtuoso musician. So I said, can you help me? And so I thought we'd be doing like a weekly guitar lesson. That's what I pictured. Sure. He enters my life as forcefully as he did in that club, and just everything about how I was living, he would call out. Mm-hmm. And again, in a very bold way, but in a way that led me to really reassess where I was at. Mm-hmm. He was raised an atheist and had become a Christian. And here I am, the prodigal son, saying, been there, done that, but okay, let's work on this other stuff, right? Yeah. Wow. He's the one that sort of triggered me to assess my being, over, you know, having too much food and not enough exercise, to now I'm this obsessive exerciser who would not miss a day in the gym. When I go out of town, I would take a crate of food with me, because every bite I ate related to the workout I was doing. Yeah. It was very, you know, very much that kind of a outlook. And so the same person says, Coons, you're spending 2 hours in the gym. What do you want to be, a bodybuilder or a musician? And it's, you know, okay, he made it very obvious very quick, you know, that is out of balance in my life. And I started shifting that back to a normal, you know, take a walk a few times a week, lift weights a little bit, but none of this 2 hours in the gym. That's not how I'm going to be leading a successful life, right? And with food too, you know, we'd go out and I would kind of loosen up a little bit and follow his lead and just eat normal things again, when, you know, have a burger here and there or whatever, without thinking about how does this impact my muscle development or all that kind of stuff. So, and through this mentorship and these talks about music and art and life and culture and politics and faith, very slowly the veil became lifted again. And I found myself right there face to face with God in my life again. And I never would have dreamed it when I started hanging out with this person. Mm-hmm. You know, I've described it to people like this. In my mind, if I'm on the earth, I'm walking away from God purposefully. Mm-hmm. And little did I know, God's saying, you're walking on a sphere, you know. Uh-huh. And there I come years later, right back to being a person of faith. And it's incredible when you see how God uses people, and it's the least likely person you would have expected, And I was not in a place where I expected to have God pull me back. It was a very long, slow process for me. Mm-hmm. But I went again from being this prodigal son, rock and roll lifestyle, to flash forward several years. I was a Bible teacher in a Christian school.
Okay.
I couldn't have a more dramatic turnaround than that. Yeah. And just all the blessings that go with that, and marriage and a child, and just, you know, incredible. Compared to what I thought I wanted for my life, mm-hmm. God comes in and says, here's this thing that's going to blow your mind better than you could have ever dreamed of. And for me, it was really interesting because it really, the food and the faith really were a part of that story. Yeah. And really still is. And the next big phase in there that I think helped me clarify my views on faith, on body, on eating and exercise was I decided to start a business partway through my story, to kind of backtrack a little bit. When I was still focused on being fit, uh-huh. right, and controlling yourself and discipline, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to help people lose weight because I love that. This was sort of before I made that shift. And a woman responded to an ad I put out, kind of a coaching ad, just saying, uh-huh. hey, I'll help you for free. Give me a call, right?
Yeah.
I was pumped. I'm in my 20s still. I got that youthful energy, right? I'm going to help people out. And the woman that responded did not want my help. She said, I want to help you. I have some business background and I have a similar interest as you do in this topic.
Oh.
And so we ended up in this friendship where, you know, she would give me books, the intuitive eating book, the famous one. I meant to write down the author, you know, the Reich, I believe is the last name of the authors. And other books too. She wasn't fully into that, and that was all new to me. And it was some of the books for how to lose weight, some of the books mm-hmm. for about body image.
Okay.
And talking to her, she filled me in on the female perspective, again, to talk in generalities, which was very, was there was overlap, but it was very different from my experience at the same time. And so as part of our business, she said, Sean, you should write a book. That's how you establish yourself as an expert in your field, right? If we're going to do this, you said you like to write. So being a creative type and not a business type, I didn't think, oh, I'll write a nonfiction book. No, I'm going to write a novel because there you go. That's how you do it, right? So I decided to write this novel, and I had never written a book before or even an article at that point. This was, you know, 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. So I sit down to write this book, and it was still focused on losing weight.
Okay.
Right. Uh-huh. And it was sort of incorporating some of these new ideas I was learning, but I hadn't quite fully come around yet. And as time went on, I'd read the intuitive eating book, and I kind of looked at, well, what has worked for me as I'm sort of transitioning from this highly restrictive, disciplined life that's even negatively impacting my musical goals. Like I mentioned, 2 hours in the gym versus 2 hours playing the guitar. Mm-hmm. So I'm making this transition, and I think that intuitive eating aspect of the books that she had shared with me really started sinking in that mm-hmm. long term. This is much more of a healthy way to go.
Yeah.
As I'm writing the book, as I'm learning that, as my faith is coming, I'm seeing that this also very much fits in with a biblical view of humans and how we are to live. Mm-hmm. And it really started making sense that, you know, in God's view, I think God presents us with things in a very straightforward and simple manner, and we make it complex, right? Yeah. All these books, how to lose weight, how to do this. And every year there's a new trend and there's a new name for it. And there's all these little tricks and games, and we're not going to get through life successfully tricking our bodies or tricking our mind. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through life successfully following God in this simple path. And so I ended up kind of revisiting this book. I set it on the shelf for a year or two, and then I rewrote it from page one. And the focus really became much more on it. It already had the body image part, but then it had the intuitive eating part, and that the goal wasn't for the protagonist to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
If her body didn't need extra weight, she'll lose it. In fact, there's a B story in there about a young relative of the protagonist who's underweight, and the idea, part of the idea of the story became, whether you're underweight or overweight, if you're approaching food in your body correctly, the same principles will lead you to a healthy body. Mm-hmm. And that was very exciting to me. So I thought that makes sense, that the right way should work for everybody.
Yeah.
In a sense, in that simplest way. You know, we're each individual, we're each going to apply these principles differently, but the principle should be the same. Mm-hmm. If you're approaching your body and eating in a healthy way that honors God. So it was just exciting to kind of see that, to see that come together and to go through that process, which for me is spanned many years. It wasn't a simple overnight thing by any means. I did feel like, and do feel like, I got to a place where I am living that out for the most part. You know, it's not perfect. Every once in a while, I'll overeat. I don't feel good afterwards. Mm-hmm. That's the big part of the process, right? Is really paying attention to how you're eating and exercising and how your body responds to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eating way too much food never feels good, right? You know, yes. The next 7 hours, why did I do that? No energy. And so, you know, periodically you'll have that extra bite of pizza, that extra slice of pizza or whatever, but in general, then you get right back on and just calm and cool. Yeah. Okay. I'm eating. I'm satisfied now. I'm going to move on. And being a lover of food, that's great too, because you get to eat sooner again too.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, that hit me early on. Hey, just have a little now. It's okay. I can go have more later.
Yeah.
I'm hungry again. And you actually get to, I think, enjoy food more. I remember it hit me one point. I'm like, I'm thinking I'm getting so much joy out of food, but I'm probably not. That's why I'm overdoing it. I'm like, no, that wasn't enough. I need more. And I had to learn to get the joy out of the food I'm eating in the moment, not the amount of food I'm eating or the restriction of the food with weight loss goals. So,
yeah.
So that's sort of my, my basic story about how that all fit together.
There is so much there. I am loving, just how God used like all these different people and all these different avenues and pieces to pull all of this together. Like someone in the music industry in LA and this lady just reaching out and saying, hey, I want to help you with this business and introducing you to. I love that she was sharing with you all these different books, like all these different perspectives, and not just one. And you can see how God was bringing you back to his word and then bringing you these principles of like, this is how I designed the body to eat and move and it all coming together. And then I get so excited because like, man, like God has been working on this, like bringing our culture back to healthful, true, healthful eating and good stewardship of our bodies all over this country and all these different people. And it's just awesome. And it's confirming of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And it's needed. We're at such a chaotic and turbulent time that in a way, I think it opens people up to actual truth.
Yes.
When things have gotten so crazy in the culture, a little bit of truth feels very it's much more obviously a blessing than when things seem normal in the culture, right? It kind of, that glosses over things, but I'm seeing more and more people that are just responding to this and just proper body image. That's even one that gets taken in extremes on both ends.
Oh, for sure.
And in our faith, I believe that's where people are going to see that simple path you know, we need to maintain and care for the body and we need to be in communication with our bodies. And, you know, media, diets, all these things over the years have broken the communication between ourselves and our own bodies. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that play out with the classic weight loss industry, but even with all of the other issues where people are hating their bodies. And instead of dealing with their spirit and their mind, they're trying to change the body to fit the mind. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to see it in these last few years that, oh, it's really branched out from, you know, a weight loss type of a thing to this much broader issue of a disrespect of the body that the Bible clearly establishes that's not the right way to look at it.
Yeah.
And that was really an insight that really excites me is that, you know, rightfully so, we focus on Jesus' ministry, his teachings, the cross and the resurrection, mm-hmm. as we should. But the incarnation is such a profound thing and relates to what we're talking about. And it's absolutely mind-blowing that God takes on a body. Mm-hmm. Here we are all hating our bodies or manipulating our bodies or dreaming up, here's what I want for my life. Body, you're going to fit that no matter what. And here's God taking on that body with all of the pains and discomforts and things that go along with it. And if my theology is right, he's still in a body.
Yeah.
Forever. Like he purposely took on what we're trying to escape. And I think the main theological message is about our relationship with God, of course, but you can definitely look at that and say that, hey, he's telling us this body's important. It's not just some earthly punishment that when you are in heaven, you're this free floating spirit. God is resurrecting the body as well for us. And so it is a part of us. It's not a vessel we fill.
Yeah.
The body and the spirit are such a powerful combination that's how God reached out to us, right?
Wow.
By taking on flesh to walk amongst us and live amongst us. So yeah, it's just, you know, it's exciting when you see these things. You're like, wow, this is huge. And when you know, for your listeners, wherever you might be in your walk, if you're struggling with this, it never feels good to have a struggle, but through that struggle, you might be developing a closer relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
You might have these other great changes in your life going on through the problem that you're having, because mm-hmm. you have to think about it. You're going to have to think about it and talk to people and listen to shows like this and read books. And even though it's a negative in the moment, God can turn it into a blessing ultimately, in that you will learn more about life and more about yourself and more about what he wants for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I was trying to look it up on my phone, but then I realized that was going to be futile. I wish I could. I know I'm not going to do this justice, but I'm just kind of like, wow, God, because at church on Sunday, our sermon, the pastor was talking about the prodigal son.
Mm.
And he talked about how, like, we always view, like, just like the word prodigal son, like in this negative, right? Like, oh, like that's negative, such a negative thing. But he was saying the true meaning of the word prodigal, it's something like lavishness, like lavish grace. Or so like the name prodigal son is really talking about how the father responded when he came home. With this like lavish love. So just that, it just really changes the way you think about that story, that we talk about it as the prodigal son, which the focus there is this son that was lavished upon when he returned home, instead of the focus on the son that left.
Right. Right. That's huge. Yeah. And that's God telling us how he looks at us, right? And we all, you know, and I know we all are in some ways, in some moments, doing the wrong things, which separates us from God in our own mind. God's always right there.
Mm-hmm.
God's not like, ooh, you scared me away this time. You know, I'm far from you now. No, he's always there, like in the story.
Yeah.
We're the ones that are turning away on purpose or just not acknowledging the reality of what's right there before us. And like you said, that story, it's to me, it's just such a beautiful, you know, view of the gospel, and that it's God's always there loving us, ready. It's us enjoying that, you know. Yeah. And with our bodies, God created a body that experiences pleasure and joy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of it. In enjoying it in the right way, you know, and every way we can experience pleasure, we humans twist it, right? Yeah. So, yeah. You know, our lungs breathe air. So some of us have smoke, you know, or, you know, we can have a glass of wine or we can have a bottle of wine and, you know, we can enjoy a healthy meal that makes us feel good, or we can use our body to try to fill a void that isn't going to get filled with food. And so, but yet the body is meant to experience pleasure, and we should get joy out of eating, and we should get joy out of exercise and those kinds of things. And there's that weird, you know, that kind of dualism again, where the body's bad, but the spirit's good. It's like, no, they're both meant to be good. They're both meant to be enjoyed.
Yeah.
They're both going to have struggles, but God gave us pleasures in our body to be a guide, but along with his spirit and his values. And that's what gives us the best life. And I, you know, as much as when I was pumped from the discipline I was into, it's not as enjoyable as just living a calm and life where you enjoy your meals, enjoy your exercise, and you know, it's a greater pleasure.
Yeah. Well, and I think about, you know, we're kind of talking about these extremes, and that's definitely part of my story. I have really had to teach myself to not be like all in or all out, very extreme. But we see a lot of that in our culture with even this space, like you're in diet culture, you're all in the weight loss, the whole thing. Or we see this like anti-diet, anti any sort of need to take care of your body. We see this like, you don't have to take care of your body. You don't, you know what I mean? You don't need to be a good steward. You can just love it mentally and do whatever you want to it. And I think that's part of what makes us different as Christians, is we are called to be good stewards of our body. And that's a very different viewpoint than what we see a lot in the secular world of, you actually, you know, you don't have to take care of your body. We do. We are called to be good stewards of our bodies.
Yes.
And so that's, I think, what can get Christians in trouble too, because they can twist that and pull things from our culture, that dieting and making yourself smaller and spending 2 hours in the gym and all of these things are being a good steward of your body.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, it sounds like you found for yourself what works for you. What is a being a good steward of your body? What truly is healthful towards your body? And, you know, that's our hope for everyone here. And a thing that I think is a struggle, you know, we can make the differentiation between men and women. I think that they're 100% there are differences there. But I do think that there is a lot of aesthetic goals and things like that with men as well. And a desire to look a certain way. And like, we are definitely seeing that with both genders. And so tell me a little bit, maybe about body, about your book, and about kind of your thought processes with body image. How do we embrace being good stewards of our body and release kind of the outcomes to the Father?
Sure. Yeah. I'd be glad to talk about that. And just a quick comment on a point you made. Mm-hmm. About men and women both being caught up in the aesthetic aspect of the body. And that absolutely is happening with men. Mm-hmm. I mean, because of media. I mean, I think it happened. I think it was promoted to women. They got a head start on women for a few decades. And now they're like, hey, there's this whole other market. We need to disrupt their mind and get the boys focused on six packs and muscles and all that. Some of it good natured hero movie. Okay. Warriors are going to be built a little bit more muscularly, but we all get it. Like it's, and I was a teacher for 20 years and I heard in classrooms, little boys talking about stuff I've never heard them bring up before about the body and about, you know, these types of things where they're as focused on that now and as insecure more so than they've ever been in the past. And so it's sad to see that too. Yeah. I mean, neither sex should be pushed in those directions, but yeah. both are fully yeah. at this point. And so, yeah. And this kind of ties into a little bit about the book. When I wrote the book, you're trying to get people to read it, give you reviews and to maybe get your little blurb for the cover, for the inside of the book. And so I wrote to tons of people, zero replies from anybody, unknown writer. I get uh-huh. it, you know, you're asking somebody to take a couple hours of their life, right? Yeah. To dedicate to reading this book. I said zero, but there was one person who wrote back immediately, Heather Creekmore.
Yep.
Who I know, you know, yeah. and yep. and she said, "Hey, I'd be glad to read your book." It's just super encouraging and enthusiastic, and she read it for me and wrote me a nice review for the book. And we were very, I think I found in her book compared to Who, mm-hmm. doing my research, there's like the nonfiction
yeah.
version of my novel in a lot of ways. Like they yeah. really paired well together. And so we clicked, and she ended up asking me to write some articles for her website. And so, and the focus has been on men, and the focus has been on boys and dads talking to their sons and modeling these ideas in a way that can help the kids navigate this kind of media focused age we're in, where we're just seeing all these images all the time, especially young people are so influenced by that. So it's kind of interesting how that all came together. But I think was your original question was about what types of ideas are represented in that? Is that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I love where you're going. Like, let's talk about, like the body image. How do we talk to these kids that are growing up in this focus? How do we lead them to the truth?
Yeah, I think it's so challenging. I'm 50 years old. I'm not going to see an ad of a man ripped, glistening in the billboard and think, oh, I better go try to look like that. It's yeah. so much easier as you get older to just, yeah. that's not where I need to be. But when you're 14 or you're 15 and you want people's attention, we're in this time where that age, you always want attention. You're transitioning from your family who you know loves you to, you need to draw people to you. You feel like that at least. Yeah. You need to draw friends to you and get them to like you. And they're seeing kind of the worst aspect of that model to them continually. So some of the things I've written about that are directed towards younger people is, I mean, one, minimizing some of that input. I mean, it's just not a good thing. There's just not much good coming that way for young people, at least from Instagram and stuff that really highlights the visuals of the body.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have a biochemistry, and a man sees a woman in a Instagram shot, they will have a reaction. However yeah. faithful they are, we are, we have that yeah. aspect of our brain, and we're also seeing images just that are these, model looking people, which are often, photoshopped and, are not living a healthy life. And maybe you're just genetically predisposed to look a certain way. It creates a reaction. I mean, they've done studies that girls and boys are flipping through and they're getting little neurotransmitters are being released by seeing these types of images.
Yeah.
And it makes them want to get that thrill. So they keep looking, and the more they look, the more they are implanting in their mind a visual image of an idea that doesn't necessarily relate to them and most certainly isn't what they should be focusing on.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, one step I think is, in any way we can, not having that be a part of our kids' lives. Yeah. You can't help it be on the billboards and see some of it. And we need to teach our children to have wisdom and be able to be in the world and have mm-hmm. these things and have it not direct our paths. But on the other hand, there's no reason to say to a 14-year-old, here's Instagram, knock yourself out. I hope right. it turns out well, and yeah. then wonder why it doesn't. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I think the other, another really important part is, as we all know, kids listen to us, but they definitely watch us and they see, how are you living?
Yes.
And what are you saying to them? Are you highlighting those negative aspects of them for their own life or the way you talk about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's plenty of adults that are, oh, I'm fat. Oh, I don't like the way I look. And the focus is on those negatives about their body. Well, the child's learning to critique their own body in that way. Yeah. And I know from my own son, you know, I try to talk a lot about the function mm-hmm. of the body over the appearance of the body.
Yeah.
You know, and how, and I share my own experience with them that, that people do look at each other and they do react based on what we look like. That's not what God wants us to be doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something we have to continually remind ourselves about. What does God want me doing in this moment? Probably not obsessing about what I look like or what other people think I look like, but on how am I being of service to other people? How am I working on my talents to be a better part of my community and things like that. And, you know, and like you mentioned earlier, the balance, of not saying like, who cares what you look like? Like, no, other people, I always tell them other people are the ones that look at us. So brush your hair before you leave, you know, make sure your clothes are clean. But I said, beyond that, that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, take care of your basic appearance.
Yeah.
We look how we look. It's all going to be fine.
Yes.
People really respond to how you treat them. You know, are you encouraging? Are you being a good role model to people? Are you being a true friend? Mm-hmm. That is going to be what builds lasting relationships and satisfaction. And so just modeling, like I meant modeling, talking about those things and making it a regular part of our conversation. You know, it's as a teacher and as a parent, I think at first you kind of think, well, I've said this thing one time. Well, there it is.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah.
My wife one time when my son was about 4 and I was teaching 8th graders.
Okay.
And she's like, our son, he's not changing on this one issue. I can't even remember what it was. I told him like 10 times. I go, well, prepare for about 10,000 more times because the 8th graders are dealing with the exact same issue he's dealing with. And they're about 14. So, and it's the repetition, right? It's why we go to church every week to celebrate the resurrection and to celebrate God's saving of man and lordship of man. Cause once a year is not enough. One time is not enough. We need to perpetually be encouraging ourselves and building each other up. So I think that's the biggest part for kids is having that good relationship that it's ongoing, it's modeling, it's explicitly explaining why we believe what we believe about the body. And I think, you know, if you start, it helps to start young because these are it's common sense in the sense that God put these things into us, right? Mm-hmm. I eat when I'm hungry. I stop when I'm satisfied. I notice how it makes me feel. I adjust accordingly. I mean, that's all built into us. And so the truth resonates with us, especially when we're young.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, as being a teacher of like basically middle school through high school, something goes wrong. That's the kids start out ready to accept the truth. And then they're just, you know, we're motivated to seek the esteem of man. Right. Yeah. And so we get lost in those adolescent years sometimes, but at least when you plant the seeds, they're in there, you know, those lessons are in there. They don't always pop up in the moment. They might come up years later when they're ready. For me, I had a 10-year crazy ride that would have been nice to have avoided, but I didn't. But when I came back out, I'm like, oh, there's those thoughts that I heard when I was a child and what led me to be a Christian in the first place. There they are. They've been there all along. Now that I need them and I'm willing to accept them, they're already there because I was taught that growing up.
Yeah, I think that's really encouraging to people. That's a really encouraging thought that, you know, whoever the young people are in your life, that if you are continually modeling this and speaking about it and, you know, giving grace, and that they will come back to those things. And, you know, I'm even thinking if you're teaching a room full of kids that aren't your kids, and who knows what input they're getting from at home or, you know, anywhere, anybody, it's nieces or nephews, it's anyone. But if you can be one person in their life that's celebrating the good things about your body, the function of your body, enjoying food, you know, showing that satisfaction in food and not bringing about guilt with eating things and talking about the nutrition of food and talking about the joy of movement, you know, just kind of embodying and giving them an example of this like moderate, not extreme, good, joyful stewardship of the body as something and food that is supposed to bring joy and, you know, our bodies are supposed to be moved and we're going to be good stewards, but we're not losing sight of like the point of this get together is fellowship.
Right.
You know, not binging on food, or the point of this get together is this group walk is, you know, really the fellowship and secondary, like getting some movement in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just all of those things. It's important to plant those seeds and then, you know, trust that God will use them and work and hope and pray that our kids and our the young people we're influencing come back to those truths.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is who did you write Body for? Who's your reader?
I wrote Body with a female audience in mind, mm-hmm. though one of my closest friends is a male and he read it. He said, I disagree. This book, you know, it's good for anybody. And like we're saying, the overlap is huge, right? Mm-hmm. Of these principles and of our experiences. And so I did choose a female protagonist, and it's definitely focused on her and her niece. And then there's a mentor character who's an older than them, not much older than me right now, but a mentor who's a female. So it's definitely a female focused story. I would call it a comedy, though it's dealing with heartbreaking issues at times. I tend to like to find the humor in things, and in my own story, and you know, I think it's fine to be able to laugh at things and laugh at mistakes and our little foibles. And so I tried to incorporate that in the story. And I was very inspired. I don't know if you've heard of this author, Og Mandino. He was a Christian writer way back, you know, like 60s, early 70s. And he wrote these books that were a story. They were, you know, a classic novel, but they had very specific points that you're not going to miss. You know, he's making it very explicit. You don't need to be a literary, you know, interpreter of symbols. You know, you're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And so for this book, unlike other books I've written, like where it's just purely story, you dig the meaning out and all that, which is fun. And that's your most typical type of novel. This novel is much more, I believe it's entertaining. I wrote it to be, I hope it is. It's got the dramatic arc. It's got the comedy. But there are seven principles in the book that the protagonist learns with this mentor. So you kind of get to go through her mm-hmm. experience when you read it and her thoughts. And, you know, she goes through a roller coaster that's really more similar to mine, where a different approach to eating. She's kind of obsessed with always dieting, never liked how she looked or how she felt about food. She's got this best friend who's sort of just a genetically trim, lean person who then took that and is obsessed with her own leanness and fitness and tries to model herself after this person to start. Yeah. That kind of is the early part of the story. And she's not that person.
Yeah.
And I try not to, in the story, I try not to even judge that person either.
Right.
She's actually quite content with her life and her approach to all that. She's not the most moral person, and she has her own things she would need to work on if the book was about her.
Yeah.
But the book isn't necessarily for her. Mm-hmm. It's for this protagonist who needs to see she's not you. That's not you.
Yeah.
That's not your model. And so she kind of goes through what most of us who struggle with these things goes through. I'm going to try all these different things. I heard this might work. I heard this might work. And then has to eventually find the right way.
I think that's
different for each person, but the right way that you have been talking about.
I think this is such a good way to introduce this thought that there could be a different way than what the culture is telling you to anyone. it's such a, you know, as a novel, instead of saying like, here's this self-help book I think you should read, you know, right. This, it being a novel kind of opens up this more comfortable space to recommend it to someone and like get their wheels turning. So I think that this is such a valuable resource, Sean. I have not read it yet. I am stoked to get to read it.
Oh, thank you. I'm very encouraged by that. Thank you. Thank you for that. I figured we learn through drama and art.
Yeah.
I think more than through direct,
direct
nonfiction books, though I love those too. I tend to read a lot of nonfiction. I mean, I love nonfiction, but I think the things we take deep in are the movies we watch, the TV shows, the book, the novels that we read. And so that's why I thought, I think that's a good way. And I think that's sort of lacking. You know, I've done research. There's been some novels, you know, about this topic, not any that I'm aware of from a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. And I tried to write it too. And it's subtle until deeper in the story, the faith aspect. Awesome. So that, you know, I tried to write it in a way that if a Christian person reads it and it's like, oh, this is great. I have a friend who I could share it with. It's not a, you know, Bible verse on every page kind of a book at all.
Yeah.
They might appreciate it. As long as they're not anti-faith, my goal always in anything I write, articles, books, is to spread the gospel, whether it's overtly or whether in a book like this, it's much more subtly, but it's there.
Yeah.
And I hope to always have that, because I do believe any kind of struggle we have, body, whatever it is, the gospel is the core of the way through life and why we're here and how we are to commune with God. And so make it come through this struggle. You know, I've had talked to a lot of people about, you know, substance abuse. Mm-hmm. That will bring you to your knees. Yeah. And if you're going to get out of it, it's going to be with God's help. Right. Yeah. And all the 12-step programs, step one starts with that. And they're all, the more you study these things, you realize, oh, it's just right back down to self-obsession. I'll do it my way. Pride. And the gospel saying, no, there's a better way. I got it. I've already taken care of everything. Mm-hmm. Just come with me. Just follow me. Yeah. And so that's what I hoped to do with that book. And I, you know, in preparing to talk to you today, I had a thought that I wanted to share with your listeners.
Absolutely.
This probably wouldn't be helpful to everybody, but if you at all enjoy writing, I think it can be a great way to sort through your thoughts on this topic. Mm-hmm. One thing I learned about this, I also wrote a nonfiction book, like a very short book that I probably will never even publish. I was going to, but I realized I probably wrote it more for myself. Mm-hmm. And it kind of tells the story I shared with you in the first part of our conversation. And what's interesting, it wasn't, you know, writing something long, you know, 20,000 words, that would be like a novella, right? You know, 20,000 words or up. It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of words. And our thought life is so messy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm reading this book about body image and intuitive eating. Okay, I get it. But then I see the TV show and then I see the movie and now I'm actually eating. And now, you know, and then our thoughts come and go. And then the different parts of our mind debate each other, right? No, maybe I really shouldn't eat this cookie.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe I just shouldn't do that, right? Because there's those old ways we had trained ourselves. And so when you write, you really have to clarify your thinking. And it's a really, I realize how much it, on this topic alone, it changed my views on a lot of these things, because I had to write it down.
Yeah.
And in my case, I wanted to share it with the world. So I'm like, I'm sharing this with other humans. You know, I'm a teacher by heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm a person of faith. This is serious. Like, I need to, every thought I write down, I need to construct it in a way that makes sense to me and that resonates with the truth of scripture. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to share that. Like, you know, someone out there, you like to write a little bit. Maybe you don't even realize you like to write. It's a great topic. It's you. It's your story, right? Yeah. And just for your own sake, if you really write down your testimony, whether it's your faith or your food or your eating and exercise journey, how did you get to where you are and what have you learned and what do you think about this now in light of your faith, especially? Because it's so clarifying. It's just helps you think more clearly about it, I think, in an interesting way. That helped me a lot.
Absolutely. I just have to share. I have this weird relationship with writing. I have written lots of things. And like, I've been told like, yo, this is good. Like, you're a good writer way back when, like from college professors, whatever. And then recently in the last few years, I've been in this weird, like, I don't write. I can't write. I don't know what the gig is. And I've been like, well, maybe I'm not going to write a book because it's just like not coming. Mm-hmm. But something that has really helped me, and it's exactly what you're talking about, is sitting down and recording myself talking about something, because when I'm trying to write, I have to make these like concise statements, and my thought process isn't there yet. I'm processing all this different stuff, and I'm arguing with myself, and I'm like, I'm trying to incorporate all this information that I'm taking in, and I'm not to this place that I can write it yet. So if like what I find helps is recording myself, processing. Aaron and I call it verbal processing. We send videos to each other of kind of,
that's good,
because you can talk in all your circles, you can kind of get it all out, and then listening to that back, you can start kind of like connecting things and get it down on paper. So sometimes that's a good place to start, I think, if you're struggling with that writing, or if you think like, oh, I'm not a writer.
Yeah, it depends on each person. We all communicate in different ways. And it's something that you can look at, right? Are you you're listening to it and saying, hey, yeah, that's a great point, me. Like, I'm going to write that one down. Or I'm gonna put that one in my mind. Don't forget this one. Yeah. And then that other thought, though, maybe that needs a little more work, right? It's because the free flow, I love it. I mean, we all love, we're thinking people. You take a walk and you have a thousand different thoughts on your walk. But which of those thoughts are the ones, right, that we want to cling to? And I know in those, when it comes to food, there's such a body, mind, there's the animalistic side of it. And there it is. And you talk yourself in or out of the right way, right? It's tricky business, the mind. And then, you know, I think with this topic, I mentioned habits, I'm very habitual, and it was easy for me, it turned out, to go extreme the other way. It's hard, like, when it comes to exercise, for me, it's harder to work out twice a week than 6 days a week. And it's harder to give yourself the freedom on those times where you're not on the program. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, when it comes to food and food choices, we build up habits over time. That I know a big challenge for people that want to try to do intuitive eating is they feel they've lost that communication with their body. Mm-hmm. That ability to hear the signals, because they've ignored them for decades, maybe. And I think that, you know, that takes practice. It takes practice again and faith that, no, this will work. This will pay off. I can get back in touch with my body. I've almost think of it like a marriage gone bad, you know, where the people just aren't talking anymore. Yeah. They need to start back at square one, right?
Yes.
Learn how to communicate the simplest things and then grow the relationship. And it's like that with our own body. If we've lived that other way for so long.
Yeah. You know?
That's a really the mind. Yeah. Those conversations, you know, at least for me, I was really into lifting weights and looking, feeling strong, but looking muscular. Mm-hmm. And you want to dial that back. Well, your mind is telling you, you're not going to look quite the same. Uh-huh. Like, you're not going to look the 2 hour a day version of you with 45 minutes, three times a week, or even just taking walks. Yeah. And then that what you're talking about, the video or the writing where you've clarified your thoughts that you know in that moment, this is true. You kind of keep going back then. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go back to that true thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get lost again in those other thoughts that are kind of echoes from my past way of living that are not healthy.
So good. Sean, this has been such a good conversation. I feel like I could talk to you for many more hours.
Well, thank you. Likewise.
Thank you so good. Much. Where can people connect with you? Where can they find you?
The best place would be my website. So it's seancoons.com, and you can spell that different ways. So it's seancoons.com. So I have my book Body is the one we're talking about. I have a children's book on there that people can read about called Firefly. And then I have an upcoming book with a pseudonym, but it's all on my one website. So if anybody wants to read my writing, I link to the articles I write for Heather Creekmore's website, Compared to Who, through my website too. So I have a lot of articles. Excellent. More toward men, but that might be of interest. Heather thought that would be of interest to wives whose husbands are struggling with sure. these things. And she, you know, helped create that part of her ministry. So that'd be the best place to reach me. Yeah.
Excellent. Wonderful. Okay. So before you pray us out, I got to do these rapid fire questions. One of my favorite things. So we'll start with our always question is coffee or tea and how do you take it?
Coffee. I prefer just black coffee, but lately I've been putting a little oat milk just for to ease the the stomach, right? But coffee for yeah. sure. Little cream's fine, but black's good too.
Yes. Are you like a Folgers guy or
there's a Trader Joe's brand I always get. Oh, I don't know what it is, but it's one of their ground coffees, strong. My wife won't drink it. She makes her own. But nice. Yeah.
Trader Joe's coffee. I miss so much. Yeah. Mountains or beach?
Mountains. Okay. I just moved from the beach to the mountains and love it. Yeah. We're not in the mountains, but I can see them very close by. Love it.
Lovely. Yeah. Are you a road trip guy or an airplane guy?
Ooh, neither really.
Okay.
Being a writer, I kind of like that world of the mind and the stories and creative space. I love being places. I don't like traveling the road necessarily, though my story is all about the path I've traveled yet, you know.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick road trips, I'll stay close to the ground. Close to the ground is what I prefer.
Yeah. Where do you like to write?
I write right here where we're talking, right in my office. If anybody out there wants to write and wants my number one tip, get up early and write before anybody else is up.
Yeah.
I try to get up at 5 a.m. It's hard. I don't always achieve that, but that's my goal. And try to write for an hour or two. I write 10 times more and it's of more useful quality mm-hmm. at that time of day than if I try to write at 8 p.m. just sitting there.
Yes.
Gone, you know,
yeah.
the creativity is gone. The ideas are gone. So first thing in the morning, right here at this desk.
That is certainly my style as well. I always choose the hardest thing that I have to do for the day to be the first thing that I do, because that's when I'm like on it, is in the morning.
That's right. Yep.
Awesome. Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Yeah.
I had to take a brief moment. I go on and off wanting sweets at all, but savory, I'll take that any day.
Do you like a mix of like sweet and savory things?
I'd say they're more divided. Okay. We're going to go sweet. Let's go sweet. We're going to go savory. Let's go savory.
Yes. What's your favorite meal right now?
I like Mexican food in general. So I'm a rice, beans, taco burrito right in that zone is my favorite. Really, you can throw anything in it. So that's probably why it's, you know, popping in a tortilla, anything goes. So that's my favorite kind of food. I like spicy food too. I like hot sauce and salsas. Yeah. I have to actually watch that. Because I get a thrill from spicy food.
Okay.
You know, it's like, oh, like how far can you go? You know, sweating and I like that kind of hot, spicy
food. Extremes.
That's right. Yep.
I love it. And is there a food that you can't stand?
Nothing comes to mind. There's certain just, you know, I could live without mushrooms.
Okay.
I have a weird one. I cannot eat a tomato or tomatoes, but I love salsa, marinara sauce. I mean, ketchup here and there, you know, anything with tomatoes, love it. But an actual tomato, for some reason, it ruins the food for me. It's really weird.
My brother-in-law is exactly the same way.
Yeah. I tried to get over it because it's on everything. I'm like, no, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm like,
no,
not even on a taco.
That's so funny. I love it. Okay. Would you mind praying us out?
That'd be my pleasure. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Heavenly Father, thank you. Thank you so much for the time that you've given us today to meet. It's been such a pleasure meeting with Charlie Intuitive Eating for Women. I pray for your continued blessing on them and on Aaron and on their ministry, their podcast. Thank you that we can come to you continually. We can come to you anytime. You're always right here with us. You're with us in good times and in bad times. And in our struggles, you're there saying, live by my spirit, live with my strength and by the power of my Holy Spirit. We don't need to make struggles in life when we can rely on our Savior. And we just thank you for that. Thank you that we can talk to you. Thank you for taking on a body and living amongst us and going to the cross and raising from the dead and bringing and offering salvation to us through that. Thank you for your work. And again, we just pray for all the people listening to this podcast, wherever they are, that they will reach out to you, they will seek you, and they will see that you're right there with them through their struggles and just offering a sanctuary in yourself. We thank you so much. We lift this day up to you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for listening today. Before you go, let me ask you this. Are you looking for a little extra help on your own intuitive eating journey? If so, friend, we have got you covered. Remember, you don't ever have to walk this path alone. You just need to decide the amount of support and community that will best serve you in this season of life. So, are you just looking to connect with other women or be surrounded by people that get it? Then come over to our free private Facebook community. If you want a little bit more support, some accountability and encouragement, then check out our paid monthly membership program. In the membership, we have multiple Zoom events each month, and there are a wealth of resources that you can plug into for support right away. And if you're ready to go all in with an online course, then check out our 11-week group coaching program. It's called the Attunement Reset. You can access all of these resources through our podcast website, intuitiveeatingforchristianwomen.com. That's intuitiveeatingforchristianwomen.com. We're so glad you were here with us today. We'll see you in the next episode.